If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Hi, I'm Mel.
And I'm Ro.
We're from Shame on Me.
And you're listening to KPFT Houston.
It's a little scary on Earth tonight. In all the darkness, it's kind of hard to see the light. We need more people with compassionate and fewer commandos. Stand up for what's right on Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. It's time to live. It's time to grow. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. No more animal rodeos. Standing up for animals is a different kind of fight. When corporations keep the truth far from our sight, but the ones who see the truth can't ever let it go. The truth is alive on Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. It's time to live. It's time to grow. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. An animal-free Fandango. Climate chaos. A dominant planetary plight. Temperatures reaching annual record heights. If the world ends tomorrow, I'll see you in the afterglow. The postmortem's live on Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. It's time to live. It's time to grow. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. The One Health message in stereo. Leaves right now. You've got a ticket for this flight. Did you think we'd let you leave alone? The stars are burning bright. Strapping tight. Ready for takeoff. Ignition, here we go. It's Monday night and time for your Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. It's time to live. It's time to grow. Vegan World Radio. Vegan World Radio. Let love be your dynamo.
Well, it's Monday night, and you know what that means. It's Vegan World Radio. My name is Sky Jack Morgan, and over there is Dr. Crystal Heath, the veterinarian. How are you tonight, Crystal?
I'm good. I did surgery all day today, so I'm a little tired. But while I do surgery, I listen to audiobooks. And this time I was listening to The Hot Zone by Richard Preston, a 1994 nonfiction thriller. Fantastic book about Ebola virus, Sudan virus. And like so much I didn't know. And he presents it in such a thrilling way. It's like you're watching a movie, and it's about veterinarians, and it's about the outbreak of Ebola virus in Virginia at a laboratory in 1989, which wasn't really on my radar. So fantastic book. I just have to say that I'm very excited about this book.
Sounds fascinating. Do you know what I listen to when I'm when I need my eyeballs but I don't need my earballs?
Mm-hmm.
I listen to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, or KPFT.org streaming. KPFT is Pacifica Radio, and we are live on that station right now for Vegan World Radio. Sorry, I forgot. I asked how you were doing, and then I didn't do all the call sign stuff. So
okay,
that's why I was going. That's all I listen to all day long. Actually, I do. Yeah. I do actually listen to a ton of listener supported radio. That's like where I always try, no matter where I'm at. I've traveled by car through all of America, and I'm always listening to public radio, listener-supported radio, and I always urge everyone to please support your radio stations because they need you more than ever. Go to kpft.org, drop a penny in the pot, please.
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah. Well, yeah. And if you do $100, you get a t-shirt and it says Vegan World Radio on it. And I think it is my favorite t-shirt. But this week, for this hour, we will be talking about, normally Crystal and I are on every other week, but everyone is so lucky to get us on a third time this month. It's like leap year. We're here three times this month, and everyone is stoked about it. I'm stoked about it. I'm always happy to be on KPFT. And this, I hope everyone will stay for the full hour, because we're going to talk about the House Committee on Agriculture and their meeting this week, which most
last
people
week.
Yeah, that last week. Sorry.
Yeah.
Last week. It's Monday, so I'm still on last week time. Mm-hmm. Most people, I think, I've heard about people having Grey's Anatomy party, like watch parties, but mm-hmm. Crystal and I have House Committee on Agriculture watch parties. So we watched it together and paused it and talked about every moment, and we're gonna kind of
we should do like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 situation to that.
Yeah, we should, with like puppets in the foreground. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great. Although I don't know if you can. It's hard to stay funny when they're taught, when they're really talking about, hey, we need to put animals into torture devices.
And they're gaslighting you. Yes. Like, oh my gosh, the gaslighting was real. The manipulation. It was so frustrating.
It was frustrating and many times just not funny. And a lot of times you're catching up, like, who is this guy talking? Which one is this? Who are these people? You know, you're trying to catch up with all the characters in this weird, this odd display of tyranny against animals. And it's strange, too, how kind of divested they are from their own humanity and are able to talk about what they're doing to animals in terms that are so detached from any kind of compassion.
Well, but it's also it's almost like they actually believe that they are providing the best welfare for these animals by confining them into 2.5-foot by 7.5-foot pens. That's what it comes down to. It's like, we need to do everything we can to make sure that producers are allowed to continue to confine mother pigs who are pregnant in 2.5-foot by 7.5-foot pens for 114 days of their pregnancy. And we need to ignore all of the science that says that that is harmful, not only to the pigs, but for public health as
right,
well.
Right, that's the other part. I know what you just said was a great question. Do they really believe that what they're doing is in the animal's best interest? Well, I'm not even concerned. I'm not even sure they're two other things. I'm not sure that the Congress people who are holding the meeting, if they believe that they're acting in the best interest of Americans, I don't think how could they believe that? And then also the people who are fighting it on the producer side, can they really say with a straight face that, well, you'd have to ignore all of the science to say with a straight face that doing it that way is better for public health, the consumers of their product, quote unquote, the animal. It's like, so these are the three big questions, I think, if we're trying to get into their heads. I don't think we have the answer. What do you think?
The entire thing seemed like bad faith. Mm. Because look at who all of the witnesses were. They were all industry people. Not a single person was a veterinarian. We had Pat Hoard, who is the CEO of Hoard Family Farms and mm-hmm. vice president of the National Pork Producers Council. Matt Steinman, who was a pig farmer and board member of the Iowa Farm Bureau. We had Holly Cook, who is
the economist
for mm-hmm. the National Pork Producers Council. Travis Cushman, who is deputy general counsel of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Lily Rocha, who was the executive director of the Latino Restaurant Association, who made some very strange arguments that I hope we can dive into.
And like, from the retail point of view, to make those strange arguments, we'll definitely dive into, because it's funny. Rocha's comments were the ones that I've been talking the most about mm-hmm. since the one I talk about with my friends was her comments. And
yeah,
it's weird. And then the last one was Velma. What was her real name?
I thought Velma was Holly Cook in your mind, the young 18-year-old looking one. But
no,
we also had
that was Daphne.
Tiffany. Tiffany Dow Lashmet, who is the professor and extension specialist in agriculture law at Texas A&M University.
Yeah, Tiffany Dowell Lashmet was the was the Velma character. I mean, did you not watch Scooby-Doo growing up?
No, I don't know who the characters are. I'm really bad. I'm sorry.
Well, there was they're all about the same age. I think they're all teenagers. One is the skinny kind of the skinny drink of water, and the other one is like the nerdy, but like the nerdy girl and the kind of cheerleader type.
Okay.
Velma is the nerd, and Daphne was the... Anyway, Holly Cook was more like the Daphne. It doesn't matter. I thought that you got that joke, and now that you don't, I feel like that was a wasted...
I got it at the time when we were talking about it before, but I got my characters confused. So
that's okay. As long as you know Scooby and Shaggy, I think we'll...
Who is Shaggy in this situation?
I don't think we had a Shaggy, but you know what? Can I tell you, just because this is Vegan World Radio, did you know that Casey Kasem, a devout animal rights vegan, was the voice of Shaggy and Scooby? And so at one point, they wanted to do a tie-in with Burger King, and Shaggy and Scooby were going to do a Burger King ad. And not only had Casey Kasem demanded that when they ate those big Scooby sandwiches, there was never any meat in the sandwiches in the cartoon. And so when they wanted him to do the tie-in for the kind of the sponsorship, you know, like the ads, Casey Kasem said no.
And amazing.
They ended up firing him, right? He ended up not doing it for very much longer. And Casey Kasem, the weekly top 40, Casey Kasem, famous radio voice, Casey Kasem, the weekly top 40. That's my Casey Kasem ad, my impersonation.
Well, good for him.
I think, you know what?
Rest in peace. Is he dead?
I think that if he's not, he's knocking on the door. He's knocking on heaven's door. All right. So before we get too much deeper into this, so now we know the characters, but I guess we need to tell everybody
He died in 2014.
Yeah, he's
God rest
dead.
His soul.
Well, he actually
dead for more than 10 years. Oh,
but he disappeared for a while. He disappeared and no one knew where he was, and everyone thought he was dead, and then he wasn't dead, and then he died. It's a crazy story, Casey Kasem, the weekly top 40. Proposition 12, what was it? I mean, I guess we can talk about question 3 in Massachusetts, Prop 12.
Yeah.
Can you give me the rundown?
So this whole U.S. House Committee on Agriculture hearing was all about how do we overturn Prop 12 and Question 3 in Massachusetts so that producers can keep pigs in gestation crates. And so Prop 12 would basically prevent pig meat sold into California that comes from pigs whose mothers were confined in these gestation crates, and only whole raw pig meat. And what did they end up saying? Like this was about 13% of the pig meat in the United States.
Yeah, I want to say it was a little lower. So it's important because this affects all of America in a way. And so it's not just producers in California, which is where the real conflict happens. So Californians are saying they don't want the whole pig meat, but California buys 13% of all the pig meat in America, which is interesting. 25% of the pork in America is controlled by the Chinese, and it's actually having this global effect, what's happening because of the Californians over there and passing Prop 12. And then you also have Massachusetts, which is less of a big deal, but still the writing's on the wall. These states are starting to pass laws about their own public health, and then that means that people growing pig producers outside of their state are having to make changes if they want to sell to a big market like California.
Yeah, and they made the point that California only produces 0.1% of U.S. pork, and yet they consume whatever it is. I think it's 13%.
It's 13%.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah, they consume 13%, but I forget how much of the California market is whole pig meat. I think that's where I don't know that percentage. But the Chinese have a similar thing, right? It's not just the Californians. There's also international laws like this, where they don't want ractopamine in China, right? And mm-hmm. so if you want to sell pigs to China, you have to not use ractopamine, which is a drug they give to them to give them a lot more leaner flesh or something. And so it's not just California. It's not just Massachusetts. It's also international. But
they're not messing with China.
Right.
They're fine to give China their ractopamine-free pork. But they're debating whether California can dictate how they want the pig meat sold in their state to be produced.
Right.
So I think that's interesting. And why do Californians care? Well, because piglets born to confined sows are more likely to be infected and often remain asymptomatic carriers through slaughter of things like Salmonella, Campylobacter, Listeria, Yersinia, Staphylococcus aureus, Hepatitis E, and that contaminates retail pork. So it's a public health threat. That and Californians said, no, we don't want that. And Californians already suffer hundreds of thousands of foodborne illnesses annually linked to contaminated pork.
What's interesting here too is that since they did that, these percentages are crazy. 60% of sows that 60% of them have Salmonella. It was a huge number. I forget now Campylobacter, and these are killers. I mean, Listeria. There was an outbreak recently with the Boar's Head situation that killed many, many people, and that's a pretty horrific way to die. And it was an international scandal. So you'd think that these producers would like to avoid those types of scandals and just do the right thing, but instead they want to fight. Now, they fought this all the way to the Supreme Court already, and the Supreme Court listened but would not hear the case. They said this is, if you want, you can go to Congress and fight it, but you won't fight it here. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Supreme Court did rule in National Pork Producers Council versus Ross that they, you know, upheld Prop 12, but in their argument said, like, hey, Congress could pass a law that would basically preempt California law if they wanted to do it that way. And then recently there was another hearing that was basically the Supreme Court decided not to hear it.
Recently. So that's why
that
I'm
was
confused.
The new one, but yeah,
right. So they rule, and then they got it. Yeah. And so they sent it back, and the pork producers are like, well, ding dang do, darn it. We got to figure this out. How can we not spend any money to do this? Now, in the meantime, this proposition passed back in 2018. It's been 7 years, and 27% of pork producers have switched over. They've paid a little money, changed their setup. They don't use gestation crates anymore. The pigs have a little bit more space. They might have had to hire a couple more people, which, you know, supposedly these businesses are supposed to create jobs. So they had to hire a few more people, whatever. And they're happy to be still in the market, a market that comprises 13% of it, you know, 13% of the market. If you cut that off, I can see how they'd be afraid. So do the right thing, I think, what that would mean something, right? Now, these people who did 27% and they followed the law, they're standing to lose their investment because they did the right thing. They followed the law. And now they're saying, well, no, we're not going to do that anymore, maybe. So what happens to them? And, yeah, their interests are being taken into account, too, in this House Committee on Agricultural meeting.
Well, they get to sell their high welfare pig meat, but maybe it turns out people don't want to pay extra for high welfare pig meat.
Okay, so now the Supreme Court has said this. So what is this? What is this House Committee on Agriculture hearing all about? What's the point of it if Supreme Court already ruled, Crystal?
The point is to preempt state laws with these sorts of things. So they the House committee. So there's a couple of different ways that they're trying to overturn it. One is the Food Security and Farm Protection Act, S-1326, and the Save Our Bacon Act, H-R-4673, which is a retread of the Ending Agriculture Trade Suppression Act, or the EATS Act, which you might have seen a lot of animal protection orgs rallying about. But they're trying to figure out how they're going to put language into the new farm bill. And one of the ways that they were talking about was the Section 12007 of the farm bill, which has the same intent as S-1326, and it was to block states from enforcing agricultural production standards on out-of-state producers. So, you know, they're just grappling with all of these different ways. And they had this lineup of witnesses that were all giving their own narratives on how to support the pig meat industry, which, and I thought that was just really fascinating.
I found it fascinating as well. I also, just on a side note, I found it just as fascinating who wasn't there. Now, the entire committee wasn't there. And I just want to, I think it's important to mention that we have a couple of representatives on the Ag Committee, Ronnie Jackson from Texas 13 and the 5th District of Texas in Lance Gooden. Both of them are on the Agriculture Committee, and neither of them showed up to the meeting, to the review of Prop 12. I think, and this is complete conjecture, I think it's because they oppose the idea of Lance Gooden opposed the EATS Act. Buddy Carter also opposed the EATS Act, by the way. But Ronnie Jackson has also opposed federal climate mandates. And Ronnie Jackson prefers local control and no federal overreach. So I think that the Texans that we have in that world, I guess, in that kind of sub-world of Congress, they're really into states' rights and are not cool with stopping Prop 12 because of that. That's the only reason I can think of why they didn't show up.
It's interesting because Texas just became the 7th state with a full ban when Governor Abbott signed legislation, a ban on cultivated meat.
Governor
Abbott signed in late June of 2025.
So should the federal government be able to tell Texans, even though they banned it, that we shouldn't be allowed to ban it? Should we be allowed to ban what we want in our state, or should the federal government be able to force us to sell these products? Well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? It's like each state has a, like we were talking about this when we watched the meeting, the review, that each state has its own laws about cigarettes. It's a patchwork of 50 different laws. And the pork producers were saying, oh, this is too onerous. We can't possibly have a different standard for every state. Cigarette companies do. They have, they have to jump through hoops if they want to sell in every state. And they do.
And these Congress people were saying things like, our bill makes it clear, if you don't grow it, you don't get to regulate it. So that basically means all of those bans on cultivated meat, those states that banned cultivated meat, if they're not growing cultivated meat, they can't ban it. That's what that means, if it was consistent.
So we can't ban, I mean, tobacco generally grows in the Carolinas and parts of Virginia. So I guess we can't ban any of that. We can't regulate, not just ban, regulate it. And Texas can't regulate or ban cultivated meat either, because it's not grown there. It's grown someplace else. You're not allowed to. This is BS. It's insane that these, it's a castle built on a, it's a building, what do you say? It's a foundation of sand. They're building it on nothing. But I don't know, it might still happen.
Yeah. And all of this when 27.1% of all medically important antibiotics sold in the U.S. are used in pork production. 89% of pork production facilities use medically important antibiotics. It's a lot of antibiotics go into this, and 35,000 deaths annually in the U.S. come from antimicrobial resistant illnesses. So we're talking a lot. There's a lot of effects of the pork industry.
So I wonder how big pharma falls. How does big pharma fall on this? Like, are they supporting these? Like, I don't know, right? I mean, do they? Where do they fall on this? Because their biggest customers are the animal industries.
Absolutely. When we're fighting animal-based protein production, we are also fighting the pharmaceutical industry. Because if the number of slaughter-bound animals goes down, that would hurt their profits. So, but... And there's all these other arguments, these economic hardship arguments that are made, like retail pork prices in California have increased by 18.7% year over year. Low income households in California reduce pork purchases by 22%, one person said. And that should be a good thing. Then these low income households aren't going to be sickened by Campylobacter, Salmonella, all of these diseases that are found in retail pork that comes from pigs confined to gestation crates.
Makes sense to me. I mean, isn't that positive when we have fewer kids smoking and drinking? It's like if bacon is, I forget how it works, like a class 4 carcinogen or whatever it is. If it's a carcinogen, then shouldn't we be happy that fewer kids are eating bacon?
We're not looking at these economic arguments holistically. We're not looking at the whole economic picture. We're only looking at how it affects these particular industries that are hurt by this law. And this is an outdated industry. When you're talking about protecting the production of pig meat from pigs confined to gestation crates, you have to just imagine you're talking about cigarettes. You're talking about asbestos. And think of it the same way. You're talking about like lead-based paint.
Yeah.
This is the industry.
Lead in the gasoline. What if we still had lead in the gasoline and we were all breathing it in? You know, it's just...
Exactly.
We have to regulate these industries to save the children, but also ourselves. You know, like this is... It's a little obscene that we're all just supposed to be okay with this in the name of commerce, and not even in the name of commerce, right? It's in the name of this one industry, just this one industry, and they are fighting tooth and nail. And we're not even trying to destroy the industry. It's a modest thing. It's only whole pork parts, like pork chops and that type of thing, raw pork. It's not Slim Jims. It's not pork rinds, chicharrones, or anything like that. It's only the raw pork that they're regulating. And still, they're fighting it tooth and nail.
Yeah. And Pat Horde says, Prop 12 makes it a crime in California to sell uncooked whole pork meat from the offspring of sows that aren't raised according to the state's arbitrary housing standards. And that's the thing they brought up a lot, is like 24 square feet, that's just arbitrary. It's not based on any sort of science. And that's somewhat true. There's no study saying that giving pigs 24 square feet of space means that their welfare is better necessarily. Mm. But it does mean that they're taken out of those 2.5 foot by 7.5 foot pens. And many people were saying, like, what if next year they make it 25 square feet? Then we have to change our pen size then. What if we make it 30 square feet? But there are other arbitrary standards that we follow, like the Animal Welfare Act regulations that are enforced by the USDA. So the minimum floor space for a dog that is confined in a laboratory is 6 inches longer than the dog's body length, excluding the tail, measured from the tip of the nose to the base of the tail. For a beagle, this can be 6 to 8 square feet. And facilities can avoid providing daily exercise if the enclosure is considered large enough to allow normal postural movements. Is that based on animal welfare? No, it's completely arbitrary.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just in the animal world. I remember when they were raising the interstate highway system speed limit from 55 to 65, and all the science was saying, well, impacts at 55 and gas mileage are better. Like, you're more likely to survive at 55 miles per hour on impact, and also 55 miles back then cars were more optimized to drive at that speed and maintain gas mileage better. But 65, people just wanted to go 65. Completely arbitrary. It wasn't like 65 was this magic number that was science-based. So we do this all the time. So that argument doesn't hold any water to me. I don't think this idea of arbitrary. Yeah, we decided that it was that much. That's what that means. Great. They said a lot of stuff like that. Arbitrary patchwork laws. It seemed like they had their buzzwords down pretty packed.
Yeah.
Before they went into this meeting. And
Lily Rocha made the argument, this law risks alienating communities and driving businesses toward closure, arguing that Prop 12 violates practical and cultural norms.
This was my favorite. So she was representing the Latino Restaurant Association. She was also the only Californian on the witness stand. Everyone else was from Iowa, Ohio, wherever. But she was the only Californian, and she was saying that carnitas tacos used to cost $1.50. Now they cost $3.50. And I'm like, where? What year? 20 years ago? Used to cost $1.50. What year are you talking about? It wasn't any time recent. I'm sure of that. And I just thought that was hilarious.
She said, carnitas are not just a meal. They are part of our heritage.
Our heritage.
I don't think confining mother pigs to gestation crates is part of Latino heritage.
That's right.
That is not true. And if we could even say, you know, pig meat made through cultivation in a lab is perhaps more in alignment with Latino heritage than confining pigs to gestation crates. And she should be arguing against Texas banning cultivated meat in their state, because that is preventing her from having access to pig meat that is part of their cultural heritage. It's no different. Like, the production methods are no more extreme, having pig meat produced in a lab versus pig meat produced via mother pigs confined to gestation crates.
Yeah, the heritage argument is something that you find out when you're a vegan. Everyone all of a sudden says, yeah, it's my culture to eat a lot of flesh. I'm like, I was born in America. We eat flesh every breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Don't try to pull the culture.
Yeah, and your culture isn't to consume flesh that is produced by rich white billionaires by mass confining and breeding genetically selected animals that are pumped full of vaccines, antibiotics, and artificially inseminated in order to produce them in mass for your community of color.
You say rich white, Crystal, but I got to push back a little bit, because almost 40% of the pork in America is owned and operated by Brazil and China. Yeah. And so those billionaires, Brazilian and Chinese billionaires, I mean, we're talking almost 40% is a huge amount
controlled
by foreign countries. And meanwhile,
but, you know, China bought Smithfield, which was, you know, the Murphys started that. So really, it was rich white men starting that. And then the Chinese are like, well, I want to have access to your business strategy. So I'm going to buy that. And
if
then
you're
of course,
in America and you eat four strips of bacon for breakfast because you're that type of guy. You, one of those strips came from China. 25% of pork is controlled by China. If you really want to stick it to the Chinese, what's a boy to do, Crystal?
Well, if you are just joining this program, you are listening to Vegan World Radio here on Houston's own KPFT 90.1 FM and streaming at kpft.org online. So that's what a boy's to do is watch.
That's what a boy's to do. I say, if you want to stick it to China, stop eating pork. Okay, so as you know, I live with two Hispanic people, and they're from, one of them was born in Mexico and one is not, but they're both Mexicans, right? And when I was telling them about La Rocha, I think, what's her name, Rocha?
Lily Rocha, yeah.
Rocha, Lily Rocha, that's her name. And they were laughing because they're like, Claudia Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico, has gone to these great lengths to say she wants to go back to the cultural touchstones and start getting their protein from beans and growing more corn, rice, beans, corn. That's what is like the hallmark of the Mexican experience. And America has pressured them to the point, like threatening tariffs and all the rest, to keep growing soy and other cash crops to feed to animals, which is exactly what they don't want to do. And they're being coerced to continue this weird, horrific cycle. So the fact that you've got somebody up there saying it's our heritage to promote these Iowa pig farmers, and if we can't get it cheaply, we just won't eat carnitas anymore and we'll lose our culture. It's just ludicrous.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And pigs aren't from Mexico, by the way. Pigs are from Europe. Pigs came over on the boats. Yeah. They came over because of colonialism. If you want to fight, if you want to stick it to colonialism, what should you do?
Put beans on your tacos instead. Beans and guacamole, yes. So good.
Yes. If you want to, if you're anti-colonialist, you should colonialism. You should stop eating pigs.
Yeah, putting tofu on your tacos probably more in alignment with your cultural heritage than putting pig meat produced via gestation crates on your tacos.
Yes, this monstrosity, these Franken pigs that they've made that are susceptible to all these diseases and are just petri dishes of what do you call them, microbial resistant? What do you call
antimicrobial resistant bacteria.
Antimicrobial resistant bacteria.
In 2020, pork surpassed beef and chicken as the leading source of foodborne illness in the U.S. with 787,000 cases per year. 787,000 cases per year. Let's talk about that economic argument. And any reduction in pig meat consumption is going to benefit the economy in that way, like by preventing illnesses.
Right, because when people get sick, they don't go to work or they become less productive, and that hurts our entire economy. I mean, I remember during COVID, people said that they would die for this economy, but they won't give up the pig. Like, we need to get people to start thinking about stuff a little bit more macro. That would be pretty, I think that would be good. I would love to see more people think about the economy and say, well, if we're going to do this right, we've got to stop eating animals. Pigs, that's a fascinating one. I didn't know that one, that pigs have surpassed, they've surpassed cows and chickens and are now the most poisonous animal.
Yep, exactly.
For foodborne illness, though, just FBIs, though, right? Yeah.
But that perspective is dismissed by the chair, who said these are just false narratives driven by animal rights groups who are parading as farmers and ranchers.
that's a strange thing, because I was a restaurateur for most of my life. I worked in hospitality, and the few outbreaks that I knew about or was party to, there was always pork. It was pigs or cross-contamination from pork. Like someone had salmonella from tomatoes, and that was because of some contact, some cross-contamination. And there was a big one when I worked in Vegas where a bunch of people were hospitalized. Luckily, it wasn't one of my places. It was a friend of mine. His place got busted. 12 people went to the hospital. It was bad news. Luckily, no one died, but it was chorizo. It was chorizo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Got him. Yeah. Pigs, don't eat them. They're dangerous.
Yeah.
I can't believe people still do it, to be honest. And now with these slaughterhouse speed limits being removed, I keep on trying to remind people that they're cutting corners, and now they are not requiring people to, Americans aren't required to wash off the chickens of salmonella. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, it's a good thing they're not bleaching the chickens. Well, it wasn't bleach, obviously. But it killed salmonella in order to keep you from getting sick. Well, now they're not doing that anymore to increase the speed. It's become that much more dangerous.
But at the end of the day, I don't think the worry about getting sick argument is really compelling to people. But I do think it, like, just look at the gaslighting and the manipulation of these companies and how they're skirting the rules and getting around the rules and using their power to not follow basic human dignity. And that's what motivates me to continue to not consume these products, because I am just so I don't want to support these men in power. And I like animals too. So like, why on earth would I support this corrupt industry? And so that's what helps me every day not to consume these products, is I'm just gonna, you know, conscientiously object to this industry.
I'm on the same page as you are. I see people like with their hand sanitizer and all, they're taking all of these measures to make sure that they don't get sick. They're doing all this stuff, and then they'll go into, it reminds me of, there used to be this PSA that was amazing, and it was a woman at night, she's leaving work, and she looks over her shoulder, she's kind of nervous going to her car, so she puts her keys in between her fingers, so they're kind of like Wolverine claws, and she's ready for battle, and she kind of runs to her car, and she gets her car started, and she checks the back seat, no one's there, and then she gets in, and she unlocks a bunch of locks on her apartment, and then she locks them all back up, and she's like super protected, right? And then she sits down and eats a chocolate cake and smokes a cigarette. The PSA is like, you're more dangerous to yourself a lot of times. Like, you've gone through all this trouble to protect yourself.
But still, I choose bear. I understand, like, women just trying to protect themselves from men, you know, attacking them and stuff. Like, literally got a text this morning from my sister saying, oh, there's a predator in this area where you are hiking and a friend just had an encounter. Be careful. So I'm like, okay, like it's scary out there. I choose bear. But at the same time, if you are really worried, we need to be more worried about these things. But it also reminds me of The Hot Zone, which I was listening to, and all of these infectious disease doctors. And he goes into this one infectious disease researcher who's eating all of this really gross stuff and exotic meat and things like that. And I'm just like, well, how can he? He researches these viruses and he's eating this gross stuff.
This is what I mean. It's, people are so dumb. And that's, I guess, why I still want to harp on the thing about Salmonella and Campylobacter, because even though you're right, I did not stop eating animals because of those things. But I think it's hilarious if people, like the thing about women, if you're in the woods alone, would you rather be encounter a bear or a man? And most women will say, I'd rather encounter a bear. And because bears are less scary than encountering a man in the woods alone, which is, you know, telling and interesting. But if you're going to choose bear and still eat chickens, well, I'm sorry, that's just stupid. Because, like, chickens are probably going to kill you. And you're probably never going to run into a dude alone in the woods. I've gone on many hikes, and the only time I've seen really wild animals, they're pretty far away from me when I see them. and they're usually going the other direction.
Yeah.
So.
But okay, next story I want to talk about.
Also, don't go hiking alone. You don't go hiking alone, do you, Crystal?
I do everything alone. I don't want to go hiking
alone.
Yes.
Not
I don't
in like
go
the wilderness, like
with
well
people. Mm-mm.
You go hiking where there's people around on like clear,
it's in
paved roads,
urban-y areas. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
I would
not the
go
same
hiking.
Thing. You're not going to see a bear.
Somewhat, I don't know. I would go hiking alone. I don't have a problem with that.
Crystal's going to do the Appalachian Trail next year. She's just going to go do the whole thing. It'll take you all year. See you.
Okay. Bye. Talking about infectious diseases, let's talk about how we're just incentivizing dairies with millions of dollars in bailouts. We've been told, oh, these poor dairy farmers, they're suffering because of the bird flu outbreak and losing milk production. The cows are boarding, they're having to send to slaughter, and they get no money for their meat because their body condition score is like one. They're super thin and emaciated from this bird flu. Oh, the poor farmers. But turns out we're also giving them millions of dollars in bailouts. And the group Farm Forward did a FOIA request and found from the ELAP program, the Emergency Livestock Assistance Program, how much money we are giving to these dairies and really listed it all out. And it's quite shocking. This one farmer received $1.45 million for an outbreak at his farm last October. But he said it cost him more than $2 million just on milk income. The outbreak cost him more than $2 million, and that does not include the over $250,000 of extra care costs required to treat the cows with medications and extra staffing and veterinary consultations.
Well, of course it costs that much, Crystal. They treat their cows like family. Haven't you heard? Every dairy farmer treats their cows just like family.
Yeah, are you artificially inseminating your family member and then hooking them up recently to a robot so that they could suck the milk out of their udders? Is that what you're doing to your family?
I have and then a weird taking, family.
Taking away the baby and raising the baby in a calf crate isolated from other calves so that you can raise them.
That's
for
how I
meat.
Was raised. They took me from my mother and they put me in a little box and I wasn't allowed to see her. And they beat her into submission, took her milk and sold it on the market. That's how we treat our family. So these farmers are saying that they're upset that they're having to spend money on their risky business.
Yeah.
So
they have a high risk business model and they say it sucks that I had this disease outbreak. Just imagine like a puppy mill has an outbreak of parvovirus and then they're like, we lost all this money because all of our puppies died of parvo.
This reminds me of like
taxpayers
coal mining.
Are supposed
like,
to bail them out.
Yeah, like the coal mines. Like we dug these holes into the earth and shoved men down there, and so many of them were dying of black lung. It's not our fault. And then we had cave-ins, and it crushed a bunch of people down there, and we have to pay for that, for these business practices that we have self-inflicted.
This person says this was a once in a lifetime event and we knew that we were going to need support to support producers. And we knew that the quicker we could get them some assistance out to them to help them test, the better off we were going to be and the faster we'd be able to bring the infection under control. Meanwhile, producers were threatening to fire their veterinarians when the veterinarians pushed for testing and all of this stuff. And we're like bribing them. Into
You're
testing.
A veterinarian, and they said this is a once that bird flu is a once in a lifetime event. This is like the 100-year flood in Kerr County. It's the Kerrville 1,000-year flood. Of course, it wasn't a 1,000-year flood, but whatever. So this is a once in a is bird flu a once in a lifetime thing?
So. It may be true that this is the worst animal welfare disaster in dairy history, but it seems like these animal welfare disasters that are the worst in history now happen every few years, and every few years it's getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, we've heard about foot and mouth disease, we've heard about other things, and now through studies we know 30% of dairy cows who aren't H5N1 positive are seropositive for other influenza viruses. And so what other viruses are these guys getting? And are these lady cows getting? And they're incubating in their udders, just producing massive virus factories, super high concentrations of virus in the milk in their udders. And just spreading that. It's like a nuclear bomb explosion. It's like a nuclear meltdown that is happening with the massive numbers of animals that we are confining into these situations. We say like cultivated meat, what might happen? We don't know. We haven't tested it. We've never tested putting mass confining these genetically selected animals into these places like we are doing right now in these high numbers and what the implications of that are for virus replication and amplification. So
I don't know about the worst in history, though. Let me just ask you, because like I know a few, and I mean, foot and mouth disease killed like 4.5 million in just UK? And just is this just American you're thinking? Because I mean, BSE or bad cows killed 4.4 million in the UK alone. Like that's
foot and mouth disease around 6 million cattle.
6 million,
It's hard to say. The extermination of bison in the U.S. 30 to 60 million.
Oh well, that would probably be the biggest, but not a disease though. We killed those.
It's not
intentionally,
a disease.
Right?
Yeah, I mean.
I guess we've had some pretty some doozies. Uh-huh. Are the dairy cows? And you know what's funny? Because when we were at VMX. The Texas dairy man, I forget his name, he was talking about how it's endemic now. It was the Texan mm-hmm. saying that we're just going to have to live with bird flu. And when you say something like that, it sounds like this is not a once in a lifetime thing. This might be just the beginning of something. But last year, everyone was saying the Texan dairy guy, he was saying, well, this is going to work. It's here to stay. Bird flu is here to stay. We need to start planning for it better. This is what's happening.
Yeah. And I think every year, like it has a seasonality to it. Right now it's heating up. And I think I want to go out there to the farms and see what's happening with the heat, because I think, you know, it's fine when it's colder weather. The animals can like get through the bird flu. Yeah. Some abort, some maybe never able to have a calf again. So they're eventually culled. Maybe there's like an uptick in the number of cows that they're culled. But I during the summer, will we see a flare up again? And especially like maybe in October?
Oh, like I think October, November, we'll see it for sure. What do you think? You're the veterinarian. I'm convinced that's going to happen every October, November. We're going to see a huge spike in bird flu for the rest of our lives.
Yeah,
I mean, this is going away.
It's interesting because they say, you know, a lot of these herds were under quarantine and they were released from quarantine. Mm-hmm. After they're released, like, I just wonder, are we testing in Texas still? I don't know if we are testing. Like, are we doing bulk milk tank testing? Our producer is just going to be like, I'm just going to.
Well,
know.
We were like the ones testing. It was us, California. Because remember, he made that map and he was joking about Mississippi, mm-hmm. I think. Like, oh, Mississippi doesn't have bird flu. Funny. And it's just like, oh, there's not. Or maybe it was Missouri. They're the only ones that don't have it. It's because they're not testing. And it's. Yeah. There's a couple states that weren't testing. They must be testing. I mean, what's sad about the thing, at least with the birds, because they get such good bailouts, we know how many birds they're killing. Yeah. But with the cows, we don't even know. Herd level removals quietly happen. Culling data is largely hidden. We don't even know, except we don't. It's the canary in the coal mine is the worker. The dairy worker is the one that we keep on looking at. And veterinarians who keep getting tested and finding out that they have antibodies for this.
Well, only like a small number of veterinarians were actually positive, which maybe shows that we're using PPE correctly.
What is small, though? 7% of workers.
There were only 7% of dairy workers, but it was a small, like, I think there were only 3 veterinarians that actually tested positive for antibodies to it. But the fact that there are 7% of dairy workers, and we had a discussion with Andrew DeCoriolis.
Yes.
And he was talking about a dairy farmer he spoke to who his whole family got sick. And they didn't know what it was.
And they got tested for COVID. They got tested for COVID and it wasn't. They knew what it wasn't, but they weren't testing positive for anything else. Which, you know, what do you call it? What does Sherlock Holmes do? The power of deduction. Mm-hmm. it's elementary, dear Watson. He's saying it's probably bird flu. The thing is, Crystal, you say small and percentage, and then we read that dairy workers 7% of those tested, and then we find out that of course those tested are usually that number is artificially low, because actually, just like we see with any outbreak, the ones getting tested are usually symptomatic. They're going in and getting tested intentionally. We're finding the numbers are.
We're not testing enough, that's for sure.
So point being that they seem to be the red flag, right? The workers are getting sick. The vets have okay, only a few vets, but still. These are the people that we're seeing. We never hear about, oh, this herd just got culled because of all of this bird flu.
Well, no dairy herds are being culled because of bird flu.
Yeah,
they're trying everything they can to keep them alive, because dairy cows are very valuable. $3,500 costs for a dairy cow. And so they're not going to cull them. They're going to try to treat them symptomatically and nurse them through. And if they don't return to milk, if they don't produce a baby, then they're going to send them to slaughter. And then they get some money for their meat. And also keep in mind that herds that are positive for bird flu, that milk is still going into the milk supply,
right?
Because pasteurization kills the virus.
As
so
is their flesh.
No problem.
It kills the virus, yeah. But the nucleic acid is still there. All mm-hmm. of these tests are like, yeah, it kills the virus, but the virus is still present. And that
but
ain't
it's not
good.
A risk. Why is it not good?
I am. It gives me pause that the nucleic acid of these viruses are still there because of various, maybe the antibodies will help. I don't know. I think that when you are pasteurizing and you're taking some of these things, it's not a perfect system. It's not, people do drink raw milk. People, in contaminated surfaces, shared machinery, the workers who are working with this, it's in the milk. It just isn't on the shelf, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. The milk is safe, but the production methods used to produce that milk is not safe.
Right,
and I
the whole
think
supply
that's the
chain
conversation
isn't safe.
That is not being had.
Yes.
Meanwhile,
there's a lot of hands that are touching it who are at risk. And that's a tremendous thing, considering how many gallons and pounds we're talking about and how many pounds of flesh we're talking, how many cows we're talking about. When we're killing 100 million cows, and we're killing 100 million of them.
Well, we're not killing 100 million cows because I think there's only like nine. How many cows are in the United States? Well, dairy cows, there's only 9.45 million milk dairy cows in the United States. There are 94.2 million beef cows. Oh, beef cows numbered 28.7 million. And total cattle, including calves, stood at 94.2 million.
Okay, so like around 100 million is what I was saying. And so if we got 100 million cows in the system, let's say, and 100 million cows, a huge percentage of them, well, all of them are eventually going to end up slaughtered. 100% of them are going to end up slaughtered. That is so many.
Well, I'm going to be super pedantic. Not all of them will be slaughtered. Some of them will die on their own. Some of them will be killed.
Right.
20%
might die on their own. Whatever.
And sent to.
Stay with me. We only
rendering.
Have 1 minute left.
Yeah,
1 minute
exactly.
left.
Okay.
And I'm saying that with these giant numbers that we're talking about and this many ill, we have no control over who's going to end up getting sick. There's no way we're going to control this. And we're just sending them to slaughter. We're having sick animals being cut open in around other animals. It's a disaster, and it's just a you talked about atomic bomb earlier. This is like Mission Impossible, where they're trying to defuse the bomb and it's going to blow up in their faces. My name is Skyjack Morgan. I'm Skyjack Morgan on YouTube, and this is Vegan World Radio, kpft.org. What about you, Crystal? You want to
we can make cow's milk without cows now. Gourd cow milk is available and commercially available. And we are reaching the end of the hour. But if you've missed any of the show, you can always hear it again at the archives at kpft.org. And please tune in again for Vegan World Radio next Monday night, 7 to 8 p.m. And I think Ocean and Patrick will be on. And thank you, Blue, our sound engineer. And do keep listening for more progressive programming here on KPFT 90.1 FM Pacific Radio in Houston, Texas.
It's us next week, Crystal. We're on next
week.
Oh,
are we? Oh, okay,
yes.
Cool.
And if you want even more of us, find us on YouTube.
All right.
Standing up for animals is a different kind of fight. When corporations keep the truth far from our sight. But the ones who see the truth can't ever let it go. The truth is a lie. Vegan World Radio, an animal-free fandango.
the globe. The postmortem's live on Vegan World Radio.
Vegan World Radio.
Vegan World Radio.
It's time to live. It's time to grow.
Vegan World Radio.
Vegan World Radio.
The One Health message in stereo.
Right now, you've got a ticket for this flight. Did you think?